start and just, you know, have introductions later, not all that important. I find that there are an unknown, you know, I don't know who does it, but I know that there's a lot of downloading of these materials from the websites.
Uh-huh.
So for me, for 50 people to download the materials is a lot.
Are you having that many?
Yes.
Wow.
Per. Yeah.
Must be people that you don't even know.
Very likely. That's the dilemma of being on the web. Hello, somebody join us.
Hi, it's Wendy from Australia. I'll see how I go.
no worries, Wendy. I know you might have to leave off early.
Yep. What were you saying is the dilemma of being on the web?
Well, what I was saying was even though our group is small, both the videos and the tape recordings have been downloaded what I consider to be a significant number of times. So I think that 35 downloads of an audio tape is significant.
That's enormous.
It's enormous. So I track these things and I keep records of how many downloads there have been. And I do it to keep the spirits up because, you know, there's not 50 people on the phone. But
right.
Yeah. So why don't we go ahead and start? I figure I'll give people 5 minutes and it's been five. We'll give it a go, and I'll just try to note the little dings as they occur and give people a chance to introduce themselves perhaps in a bit. So this is October 18th, at least in the U.S., and 2008, and I'm Jan Rigsby, and this is a teleconference on transference. Again, if you'd like to introduce yourselves, if you have any questions, you're welcome to ask.
Ladies first.
Oh, hi, it's Wendy from Australia.
Welcome, Wendy.
Thank you.
That's all right. People are shy. It's hard when things are recorded. Let me go ahead and start. And if anybody has any questions later, they can jump in at any time. So when you're talking about transference, the most common usage of the term nowadays is for psychotherapy. And, of course, it's related to the topics that are brought up in the Pathwork lectures. But you can relate one building to another, and yet one is a one-story device, the other is a skyscraper, the other is a Guggenheim art museum. So just because something is a building doesn't mean that you're talking about the same thing. And that's actually the essence of transference. So when you talk about transference, there's many different levels to talk about. So what I'd like to do is just start from the beginning, that transference happens every single day. We all transfer. There is a difference between transferring and projecting, and projecting is simpler, so I'm going to start there. Projecting is simply taking your inner world and presuming that the outer matches, without checking, without taking a reality check. Okay? So projection is I'm happy, therefore the world is good. And I will interpret, I will perceive, I will deal with the world as if it's good. And to some degree, that's a self-fulfilling prophecy, because if I walk around it with a smile on my face, then it's very likely I'll get smiling faces in return. It's very likely that people will respond to me positively. But that's only a projection of my inner state of being onto the outside world. Okay. In transference, what we're doing is we're actually transferring responsibilities onto other people. So in transference, what we do is if I'm irritated at something and you come along and irritate me, I take my irritation per se and I transfer it onto whatever you did. a little bit stronger than projection, if you can get that. Okay? So if I feel aggressive and you feel aggressive, my aggression heightens because I'm transferring onto you some of the similarities of my fight. So that's a social transference. That's a mild level. When we get into psychotherapy, what transference refers to is that the difficulties that a person has interacting with the world actually get replayed in the therapy sessions. So if I believe that women are domineering and won't let me speak, when I do therapy with somebody, there's a very good likelihood that this deep-seated belief of mine will rise to the surface. And I may become argumentative with a female therapist because I'm actually transferring onto her my belief system about the world. Okay? Now, the initial transference happens back with the parents, and that's where these lectures start. So we'll be talking about parental transference. And then what we're going to do is move on and go into the reason why it's in the lectures. And that is that there's actually a level that's a spiritual transference. Okay? So you can understand transference from many, many different angles. Since I teach the Pathwork lectures, I use the Pathwork concepts. You do not have to accept them, but I work from them. So in another therapy, in another discipline, somebody might say, okay, you're born and you start from there. But Pathwork is a spiritual discipline, and we go back one step further than that. And what Pathwork presumes, brings forward, offers to you as the possibility that this is true and that this is how the world works. Again, you don't have to believe it, but it's useful to imagine it and to work with it when we're working with transference or when I work with it. The Pathwork lectures suggest that we choose our parents, that we don't just pop into the universe because egg met sperm, that what happens is we actually have a planning team that works with us, and we are selecting our parents for the precise purpose of working out our spiritual task, or a spiritual task. So the parents are chosen for their pluses and their minuses. And the environment of the parents is considered, you know, everything, their genetics, the kids they've already got, the kids they may dream of having, the extended family, the society, the culture. That all of this is considered in choosing the parents so that you can have the optimum experience for working on a soul distortion. That's quite different from the normal, the child is born and he wants to be happy, and the psychological explanation for why we become unhappy and where happiness may lie. From a spiritual standpoint, we're here to learn something. We're here with a task in hand. So in the choosing of the parents, one of the things that we're looking at is how can these parents reflect two sides of a coin? And the term used in the Pathwork lectures for that is soul split. And by that, what they mean is that if you are, for instance, coming in to look at an issue of integrity on your part, now, you're not coming in to prove that you understand integrity, necessarily. You may be coming in to find out what integrity is all about. In other words, integrity in good times is easy. What is integrity like in bad times? But you could also be coming in to learn the value of integrity. And you can do all these things from so many different angles that it becomes too confusing to talk about it generically. So while we have these lectures and they give us some guidelines, the actual work is done with individuals, talking about their individual path. So to drop out of concept for a moment. I found myself in a fascinating issue of transference when setting up this teleconference. And I'm going to shorten things up and make it a bit of a story so that I don't have dangling details and this doesn't take very long. But in the shorthand version, let's say that America is my birth parent. And I spent 7 years in Australia, and so there's a part of me that feels that Australia is like an adoptive parent. It's an adoptive family to me. And I learned to live there. I learned to care about it. I learned about their peculiarities. I learned about parts of them that Americans have no clue. And so as I came back to America, I found myself being very aggressive whenever my adoptive country was slighted in any way. Also happened while I was there when Americans would come visit. So what happened this week was we've had some trouble with the daylight savings time in Australia, which was changed from its previous time period. And so the messages kept going out wrong. And at first I was just annoyed. And then I started getting angry. Now this is where the transference comes in. It became more than the fact that the software people hadn't dotted all their I's and crossed all their T's and done all their homework. It turned, emotionally for me, it turned into a slight against my adoptive country. And I started getting angry. Now, this has happened many, many times before, so it was very familiar, so I was able to pick on it quite quickly. So when I'm talking to the service representatives, I'm particularly argumentative and particularly miffed, and I want the Australians to be taken care of, and I'm irritated at the Americans for being parochial about their time zones. Doesn't help when you're talking to customer service people. The point I'm trying to make is this, that by deciding that there were two cultural authorities in my life, two aspects of humanity who spoke to me, who meant a lot to me, who helped me find who I was. You get the idea. Try to just shortcut it down to parents. That I found myself taking sides. I found myself taking up for the perceived weak partner against the perceived overbearing partner who didn't make allowance. Now, in transference, what happens here is intellectually you can say all the right things, intellectually you can understand all this stuff, but in actual real life incidents, emotions come up. So intellectual knowing is fine, but the real understanding and knowing comes when you come across a real life emotional situation. And the focus of this work is not to hear somebody speak about transference and get it all clear and say, got it, thank you, let's go on to the next. The focus of the work is to get a concept to determine if this is something that is useful in your life. This is something I want to work with, because some concepts simply aren't active in your life. If it's something that sounds intriguing to you and you think you might have some work there, then you start to notice day by day, week by week, month by month, when this kind of situation comes up. And as it comes up, if you can work it out, even if you just work it out a little bit, even if you just notice it in the moment, that's when you really rewire yourself emotionally. Because if the moment goes on, and it just is, and you get angry, and you don't recognize what happened, that's how you continue to lay down more wiring that that kind of attitude or emotional climate is right and acceptable. But if in the moment of feeling this good cop, bad cop sense, you go back and say, you know what? I'm recognizing this is a little bit like mom and dad. Or this is a little bit like whatever the situation is in your life. And you look at it and you see the parallels. This is a way of becoming more conscious of the unconscious scripts that are running in your life. And this is why we study transference. This is why transference is obviously quite important in psychology. And this is where also spiritual transference can happen. So let me speed forward just a second, then I'll back up and do parent transference again. In spiritual transference, the ultimate authority in any spiritual discipline is a higher creator, and the shorthand for that, for a lot of people, is God. If you're allergic to the word God, whatever phrase fits your belief system and makes you comfortable. But some higher power with some level of intelligence and some level of authority or control, either in how the world started or how it's currently operating. That when we work on a spiritual level, it's important to recognize that all this human transference and all this rebellion against authority and all this frustration, it really leads back on a soul level. And beyond a soul level, it leads back to our relationship with God. So it's simplistic to say that all authority issues are about God, but it can be very useful to consider that as a possibility. But if that doesn't work for you, if it doesn't feel like a place where you feel enthusiastic and you have some thoughts and you can work, that's fine. That's what parental transference is for. And if parental transference doesn't work, you can work with your friends, your spouse, your siblings. You can work with it almost anywhere. So what I was trying to give is an overview that transference is simply a human reality, that parental transference is a common everyday thing, and that for unresolved issues, what happens is the transference begins to repeat in patterns throughout our lives. And that it's valid to work on these issues wherever you feel capable of working on them. So if you're comfortable working with your spouse or your partner or your friend, that's great. And if you want to go back and look at your parental stuff, that will also work. And if you want to deal with, on a soul level, your relationship to spiritual authority, that will work too. So I put some notes up on the internet that I've mentioned. I usually work a day or two prior and I get some notes together. And I put on the internet a lot of notes about psychological transference because it's not used in the lecture. The lecture is extremely good about parental transference, but it helps sometimes to have some background. So I offer the background to see if it's worth something for you. It talks about transference. It talks about countertransference, which is when the therapist is in transference. Or, for instance, if you're having a fight with your partner and you're transferring onto your partner and your partner takes that and transfer it onto you, that's also countertransference. Okay, so it's just a matter of the point of view where transference goes. So in psychological transference, there's a joke version, and that is the Freudian psychoanalysis. And that's the picture that many of us have about therapy, where the therapist sits on a chair in behind the client, and the client lays on a couch and stares into the air and talks for an hour, and the therapist doesn't say anything, and then you get up and you pay him a wildly extravagant amount of money, and you walk out, and it's reasonable to ask what that's all about. The theory behind that is that if the client is not looking at an actual human being, then what will happen is the client will very slowly begin to bring up their projections and transference about human beings in general, so that the therapist gets out of the way and allows himself to overhear the client as the client talks about people. And without having something to focus on in front of them, the client winds up talking about inner struggles instead of objective reality. So that's the deeper understanding of the joke version. of psychoanalysis. Now, when you have a real person in front of you and you start tying facts to that person, that's where it's really hard to see that it's coming out of your imagination. It's all too easy to say, but, that person did this, or, you know, there's a reason why I feel this way. But the question that we try to ask when we do self-analysis and when we're looking at self-development is, isn't it interesting how I always feel this way when I get into an argument with a certain kind of person? Isn't it interesting that I always get on my high horse and feel that I must protect the weak? And if we track that back to our childhood and we find a similar attitude or pattern coming from parental arguments, that means there's something there that we might want to work on. Doesn't mean it's bad, wrong, or there's not a value judgment on this. But a pattern of behavior that goes back to your childhood means that you have a very good chance of continuing that in the future. So by resolving that, understanding it, bringing it to the surface, and having more consciousness about it, you can unravel this so that it's less likely to be triggered by other people. And the hope would be that you have a chance of seeing people for who they really are. Now, those of you who have read quite a few of the lectures understand that this lecture obviously goes right back to lecture 72, which has the self-explanatory title of The Compulsion to Recreate and Overcome Childhood Hurts. And that's about an active mechanism that is based upon transference. Okay? So this is more about the underlying reality of human transference than about how we decide to fight childhood battles with our current partner or friend or job. Any questions at this point? Okay. So I'm going to run through a very small exercise just to try to give you an idea. Now, understand that doing an exercise on a teleconference is an exercise in futility because it's not so easy to know where everybody is, what your circumstances are, or what you're in the mood for at this point. So, if you will, once again, it's in the notes that are on the Internet. You can download them and work with them later. But just let me read through them and just float with me. Just hear the words, hear the suggestions, and just notice if there's anything of value here that rings a bell for you. Okay? So imagine for a moment a person in front of you whom you're very close with. Partner, spouse, friend, and someone for whom you occasionally have difficulties. And let it be current. And it can even be the cashier at the local store. It can be a customer service representative that you had a talk with. So just let for a moment the image of that person appear in front of you. And think about some aspect of their personality that you have a strong reaction either to or against, positive or negative, doesn't matter. And the reason I suggest it's someone that you have a little difficulty is that's more of a lively relationship than a passive or bland relationship. And it's in the relationships where we are sometimes happy with the person and sometimes not, where we're probably going a bit deeper, where it's not a superficial relationship. So if you've got an idea of some aspect of their personality, see if you can put a word to that. Describe it in your own mind. A word, phrase, they act like blank, blank, blank. Or notice why you might have picked this person. I picked this person because, yeah, that person irritates me. That alone is okay. And think for a minute about the kinds of reactions you have about that person. Now, if you're willing, I invite you to close your eyes for a moment and think about your parents when you were young. Your parents today are quite different from when you were young. So close your eyes and just think about your parents. And imagine, like you're looking through a scrapbook in just a few seconds. See if there's any similarity in this person to one or both of your parents, or in the interaction with this person to the interaction with parents. So I'm just going to list off four things. Again, this is just to give you a taste of what this kind of work can be like. And, of course, it would be nicer if we were working with a specific reaction or something more specific, but it's hard on this teleconference. So, four suggestions. That you see the other person in the same way you believed your parent was. Big, tall guy. My father was a big, tall guy. They're both strong. A strong, simple similarity. The second is that you see the person that we focused on first as being like what you wish your parent could have been like. Third is you see the other as you were as a child, and that you are acting to that person like your parent did to you. So in other words, you're taking on the parent role to someone that you perceive behaving like you did as a child. And the last is that you see the other as you were as a child, and you act like you wished your parent could have acted. So again, all I'm trying to do is fluff up a little bit and try to give you some idea how you may have, without perfectly realizing it, in your daily routine, in your daily life, be acting as a parent, acting as the parent like your parents were, acting like the parent you wanted your parents to be, a better version of your parents, improved, better model, or in some situations where you're behaving as a child, the way you used to act, and in some situations behaving as a child the way you wished you had been. More open, more generous, more dedicated, more supportive, something like that. So those are the kinds of the things that we're looking for when we look for patterns of transference. And as you can see, it's not simple. It's not something that you can do generically. So each one of you probably has a completely different imagining, hoping that you were able to do that at all. So I want to go back to, we have transference with the parents because we're children. So in your relationship with your parents, nobody resolves all their conflicts. There isn't a situation where a child is perfectly happy. Now, I've heard that before. I've heard people tell me they had perfect childhoods. I have my doubts about that. It's very hard for a human being to grow up and not have some conflicts with their parents, because the whole job that parents have is to curb and develop the natural impulses of the child to fit within the confines of society, children aren't allowed to simply do what they feel like doing. And at some point, there's going to be resistance from the child into going into step with what the parent perceives as an appropriate way to behave in society. And that can be as disarmingly minor as a parent saying you need to use silverware. And they'll put up with a one-year-old or a two-year-old eating their eggs with their fingers. But at some point, the parent's going to feel like it's their job to enforce the use of cutlery onto their child. They've got to prepare their child to go out in the world. At some point, the child needs to dress their clothes right side out instead of inside out. At some point, the child needs to wear shoes even though it may not like the feeling of the shoes. And the parent has to decide that it's cold outside or the ground is too rough or they're going someplace where shoes are appropriate from the parent's point of view, even though technically they're not important from the child's point of view. Now, I know I'm talking about very, very, very subtle minor stuff, but it's so easy to come up with the big stuff that sometimes if we don't feel I got beaten by my father, I hated my mother, if we don't feel all these gigantic, huge, thunderous emotions, we may think there's nothing there, but there's always something there. In fact, for a lot of people that I work with, and for some of the things that I worked with personally in my own life, I found it very hard to put my finger on it because I had a, relatively speaking, innocuous childhood. And while I knew that I was unhappy, what I didn't realize was that I had judged my own unhappiness as being a problem. What we're dealing with in this lecture on transference is that suppression of my own opinions as a child continues to this day in my life. My willingness to be a good girl was not done out of free will. That decision was done in order to gain approval and love. And by developing, people who know me say, what do you mean you suppress yourself? But I'm learning. I'm opening the doors here. But relative to activists, see, I would see an activist on the street or somebody carrying a placard or someone screaming and ranting and raving. I'm horrified by that. That, to me, is Armageddon. That's a nightmare. That's beyond my capacity. I can't deal with people on that harsh and abusive and abrasive a level because I would naturally presume that I would be turned off, that I would be sent to my room, that I would never be spoken to again. So whether or not that's in my nature, it was not developed. Now, in a different household, you'll wind up developing children's nature with different openings. In another household, it is acceptable to rant and rave. It's looked at as an expression of fire and spirit, and the parents are proud of it. And they like creating waves in their community, and they like a challenge. The kind of person that enjoys debate and argument and isn't afraid to upset someone. That's a different family climate. I didn't grow up in that. And yet my nature might have responded to that had I grown up in a culture like that. So when we talk about transference, I invite you to consider that the conflicts that you may have had with your family may have been very subtle and very mild, and if some of the suppressions that went on are still active, you may not feel them in a rousing way. So you may have to look at very subtle details. This is like being an archaeologist sometimes. And I just love the picture of an archaeologist, and there's a whole desert in front of them, and they're working on this little tiny square surrounded by string with a tweezer. And they're flaking, they're turning pieces of soil with a tweezer in a little tiny 6x6 inch area. When you pull back the camera, there's an entire desert. There's mountains. There's it's an acre of things to be looked at. And yet that person knows and is trained that there is so much evidence in that one little area. If you see, if you look, if you examine, and if you know what you're looking for, that it can be extremely productive to do this. So my experience is that a lot of clients that I work with will to some degree have to look at their transferential problems and some of their suppression and the things they want to work with as if they were doing it with tweezers, because it's very, very subtle.
Jan?
Next, yes. Mm-hmm.
That was when you were talking this past, the word in my own life suddenly popped up very strong, mm-hmm. passive.
Uh-huh.
And I've been reading this material, I sense the importance of it, but I found that there's been a strong resistance to delving into it.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that from a passive viewpoint that that would make sense, because I didn't want to dig up anything, you know, to stir the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seems very difficult or almost impossible to pinpoint specifics like you're talking about digging up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I see the subtlety of all of those, and you get hints of it, and I have in the past, but I just kind of a passive to that as well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I find myself now, I guess, is reluctant to dig into that, but seeing the importance of doing it.
So we're often drawn, we're drawn to a certain kind of work because something's not working. Okay? So in the space where you have come across this work and you're enthusiastic about it and you're feeling that it has relevance in your life, that's probably why you're looking at the material.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? We've talked about it before. That's a bit of eros. That's your heart saying, there's something in here for me and I want it. Okay?
Uh-huh.
Then we do at some point have to decide where to start working. And in terms of where to start working, the easiest place to start working is where something's not functional or where something is dysfunctional or where we have disharmonious events occur in our life. So taking your statement as an example, it would be very subtle work, but if you had a growing unease about the possibility that you were more passive than you realized.
That's what suddenly dawned on me in this discussion, yeah.
Okay, so that's fine. That's a place to work. There's no drama there, no Sturm und Drang, and no, you know, thrashing of pillows and so forth, and it's still very, very important and valuable work to do. So what you would be looking for once you got that idea is you'd start to look for patterns in your life, moments in your day when you had the choice to speak up or not speak up, and there was an, it's as if you rack up, you sorry, it's as if you scored every interaction you had, and you scored it active or passive, and you noticed that the majority of your interactions with people were from your scoring position, your decision on how to score, passive. Then you take a look at, is that real? I mean, some people are passive, but what I try to point out to people is the initial premise is that you were concerned. The initial premise is you had a growing unease. You had a suspicion that something wasn't right. And you need to hold on to that. You need to believe that if you think something isn't right, then either it is, and you need to understand it better, or it isn't, and you may need to understand how you got there. So if you are a passive person, but you're uneasy about it, maybe all you need to do is examine it and look at every issue and say, I understand that I'm passive most of the time, but after I analyze it, I'm happy with myself. I think these positions are appropriate. I think these interactions, I don't think that I'm giving myself away. And yes, I can see where the word passive could be applied. That's a valid exercise in self-analysis. It is valid to look at something even if you don't think it should be changed, because once you finish that analysis, you would probably be more comfortable with your own sense of passive. You would very likely be more at ease with yourself, more relaxed. And if there were any inhibitions or if there was anything wrong, they might work themselves out. Does that make sense?
It does, but as you were talking, I seemed to flash that a lot of that, maybe it's just the initial kind of discovery of that in this way that makes me seem like a lot of that need should be different, you know?
Mm-hmm. So it's not a value judgment, and sometimes we do have value judgments. You may have a value judgment about being passive, and yet you may like it. So the work is to become more at ease, to bring these two pieces together. This is what my nature is, and this is my judgment of that nature.
Uh-huh.
And when you can bring your judgment into alignment and say, I work on my judgment so I'm not negative about it, and I don't disparage other people for their choices. And I also want to honor my choices. Now, the other way that this could work out is that you could look at these incidents and decide, I'm actually more passive than I think is appropriate.
Right.
And then you start looking at why. That does not mean you start marching in the street with placards. Okay?
Right.
That's an all or nothing scenario. But you may find that you need to push the edges of how you interact with people, of what you do, to find a new comfort zone. And what
and the starting place for that is remembering that those minute or even larger situations with your parents.
Yes, it can be, because it's very likely that if you are not following your true nature, that began a long time ago.
Right.
So let's. I know that we've been talking about a lot of other subtle things. Sometimes these teleconferences go places I didn't realize they were going to go, and that's a good thing. And then people say, "Where was the transference part?" So I want to make sure I bring that in.
Yeah.
In the transference part, this is how. Let's work with this example because I think it's a very good example. I think it's very subtle. I think it's very common, more common than people realize. Okay, so let's take the example of somebody who just thinks twice before they speak, every single time they speak. And what that means is they lose their opportunity, they tend to have a more passive role because they're never quick and there first. Okay? If you track back to your parents and consider how they argued, how did they deal with disagreements? What was their opinion about somebody who spoke up and was wrong? You may find, and once again, you can feel how this really needs to be an individual study. I can't start making generalities about this because it goes in too many directions at once. But in a real person's life, there would be answers to those questions, so that you can argue to certain extent and for a certain length of time, and then a cap is put on. And that cap could be put on by the other person simply walking out of the room or by exploding in rage. And intuitively and instinctively, what we learn as children is don't go too far. And we learn that because while an adult can take the anger of their partner, to children we think that that's the end of the world. That when dad walks out of the room in a huff, we may, on an unconscious, undeveloped level, worry that he's not going to come back. And then, if you want to put a little spice of drama in that, have a few incidents where he stayed mad for a week. Again, yes. His wife might, I'm using a male example, his wife might be able to tolerate that. She knows him real well. She's not too worried about it. That's his problem, not mine. But to a child, a week is a huge period of time. And what the child is learning is that's the consequence of speaking up. Therefore, either I won't speak up, or when I speak up, it will be perfect so that I don't risk this. And that's assuming that you don't speak up for the right thing and get chewed out anyway. So depending on the dysfunction and the humanity of your parents, again, you're learning to gerrymander. When I was a kid, I read this story. It was a great story by Alfred Payson Terhune. And he wrote dog stories, and I was into dog stories for a long time. Checked out all the books in the library about dog stories. And he wrote a short story about a blind dog that the family just didn't want to put down. And so the dog was very smart and very loving, and the family just kept supporting it, and somehow it managed to be not, it wasn't a terrible thing, and everybody got along. And they lived on a farm. And one day a stranger came to the farm, and the owner said, you know, was talking about this blind dog, and so the owner called the dog. And the dog was on the other side of the farmyard, or the, you know, big driveway, that kind of thing. And the dog starts to lope over to its owner. Only it zigs and zags and walks around every single piece of equipment that it has ever bumped its nose into its entire life. That this dog was smart enough to survive because it could remember the lawnmower, and it would be running across the yard to its master and hit the lawnmower. And in the dog's mind, it said, lawnmower, hurt, ow, don't do that. And it kept a map in its head, and it would X out, don't go there. So if you can imagine this blind dog starting to cross the yard and avoiding the tractor, the lawnmower, the neighbor's car, everything that had ever been left out in that yard, this dog is still walking around. Because the only way for the dog to find out it's not there is to risk bumping its nose into it and falling down. That's what we're like. We don't want to get shamed. We don't want to get hurt. We don't want to be embarrassed. We don't want to make people we love angry. We don't want to create household problems. We don't want to make our mother ashamed in front of her friends. All these things are very serious. They hurt. We feel them. And it's as if in some part of our psyche, we may draw an X through them. Now, there are other ways to defend. Sometimes you roar right through them. That's a different way of defending. But I'm focusing on a more subtle kind of defense that shows up in not doing things rather than doing things. Now that's the net result. And if we talk about transference, what we're talking about is your parents very, very likely had differing points of views on certain things. The things that don't give you grief, you may not even remember, or they're humorous stories. What we're talking about here is the places where your parents had different points of view, different perspectives, different attitudes, different ways of being in areas where you felt pain.
Where you felt what?
Pain.
Oh, yeah.
So in other words, let's take an issue of integrity. And I'm just picking genders stereotypically. Please excuse me, but it just, I guess it doesn't matter, but sometimes I feel bad about it. Let's say that the woman of the household who does have to take care of social arrangements and who is responsible for interaction with family and social members feels that white lies are just, they just need to happen. And that there's nothing wrong with them, and even if they get bigger or they become problems, white lies are an acceptable way to work with other people. And let's say that the father feels very uncomfortable with lies of any kind. Okay? Very subtle distinction. And yet, what happens to children is they wind up having to run errands for their parents. Johnny, go next door and borrow a cup of sugar and tell her I've run out. When the kid is looking and there's sugar on the counter, he says, but Mom, there's the sugar on the counter. And she says, well, I need that for this and this and this, so I really need more, but I don't want to ask for more, so tell her I've run out. And yet the child has also been around his father, who has emphasized telling the truth, being honest, being upright. Now, you send this little kid next door to lie to the neighbor, and this child has not made peace with his own sense of values about white lies. This poor kid is in torment. This child feels pain. They feel, in this example. They feel embarrassed. They feel ashamed. They're afraid their father will find out. They're afraid the neighbor will find out. And they don't have the defenses that an adult would have. If an adult got caught in a white lie, they might laugh and say, well, you know how that is, and the neighbor might laugh and so forth. But children don't have these defenses. So in the tiniest example of being asked by one parent to carry something out, that involves values that they know the other parent doesn't agree with or has arguments against, puts a child in the middle of a moral dilemma. And very few parents have the time or the therapeutic skills or the understanding in that particular moment to realize what might have happened to that child. And what Patrick is saying is it's meant to happen that way. That's natural and normal, and that's part of childhood. And the accumulation of these experiences, where we have felt pain and how we deal with that pain, come into our personality and our character, and they become ways that we deal with society. But if we haven't resolved it, we're still in conflict. So you wind up being a grown person who has never quite figured out the place of white lies in interactions with other people. Now, again, I hope this doesn't sound too subtle. This is a place of agony for a lot of people. This is a place that stops them from being fully present. This is a place that stops them from being, from having free conversations, because they've got this little conflict about what do I say and what is your opinion, and if I tell you I did a white lie, what would you think? My father would blow up. You might blow up. This is what we're talking about in terms of transference, where we look at somebody and we think, I wonder if you think like my dad thought, or do you think like my mother thought? So I need to figure out who you are so that I can present myself in a way that will allow me to be recognized with dignity and respect. Does that kind of help you out, Harry?
Yeah, it's a pretty good example. It was entering my mind that thinking of parents, one was pretty passive, you know, when they were together, and the other was more active, I perceive. So I don't know if that has any bearing in all of that or not.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. So the active parent, there are pluses and minuses to being active, and there are pluses and minuses to being passive. And you would have threaded your way between the two of them. Now, the areas where you threaded your way through and you found a place of equanimity where you're perfectly happy with your decisions, that's not an issue. Okay? So the only place where we look are the places where you're still feeling conflicted. And where you're still feeling conflicted, what Pathwork says is that we will find ourselves in patterns throughout our lives where this conflict keeps coming up for two reasons. Number one is the subject of 201, demagnetizing negative force fields, which is November. And that means that if we're putting out signals saying, I need lessons on integrity, you'll draw to you people who want to teach you about their version of integrity. It's like we all have little radio towers on the top of our head saying, I'm open to lessons about integrity, and somebody else says, oh, I've got issues also, or I can teach you something, or here, let me activate you. I can do that. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But the other aspect of these conflicts is that they will build defenses that we don't even realize are defenses. And that's what you may be referring to when you talk about, and I'm just taking your word for it, that it's possible that you're more passive than you may, than your nature may be.
Mm-hmm.
That passivity may be a defense. It may have been learned behavior that is so ingrained that it's going to take some work to pull that out. Now, you may never become an activist, but then that may not be your nature anyway. The work is to find a place of balance,
mm-hmm.
a place where there are conflicts, but they're not chronic, and they don't seem dysfunctional, and when they come up, I deal with them. Rather than feeling like you've got an inner virus, something's not right, I don't know what it is, and at some point I'm afraid something's wrong. It's like having something wrong with you and being afraid to go to the doctor. The fear will eat you up and give you a heart attack, even though it was just a mild infection in the extreme. In this kind of work, our unwillingness to look at deep-seated conflicts in our life will create a superimposed level of anxiety. And once we've covered that up two or three times, we are living in fear to some degree, sometimes for no reason at all. Because if we went down there and looked at it, it's not so bad. So I realize that we're talking in a very generic way about transference. But again, I think that can be important sometimes because the simplistic transference is much easier to find, and it usually gets dealt with. But the subtler areas that are due of transference, we can sometimes not go there because we feel that going there does not honor our parents. Let's go back to the example of white lies and integrity. I may feel like a decision never to white lie, never to tell anything but the unvarnished truth, is a way of supporting my father. It's also a way of irritating most of the people around me. But it can also be a passive-aggressive attack on my mother. Okay? I need to know that. I need to realize that that's not necessarily in integrity, that clinging to one parent's point of view and disregarding or denigrating another parent's point of view, that doesn't mean I'm in integrity. And if the issue is integrity, I'm not resolving the issue. I'm trying to find a pseudo-solution. I'm trying to find a camp to live in that makes me happy. That's a whole different issue than integrity. So there is, it's after 6 o'clock, or it's after the one-hour mark. I need to take a 30-second silence. I need to change a tape, and I need to have silence on this tape so I can cut it in half. So if you'll bear with me, I'm going to be quiet for a few seconds and change a tape, and then we'll start up again.